Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. We're dancing our way through Earth Day this morning, and it's a delight to have you with us. It is, we always welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. So keep that in the back of your mind. If something strikes you and you'd like to share it with us, please do so. It is roundtable@wamc.org. Let me introduce our panel to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, my dear friend Joe.
Political consultant Libby Post is with us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe.
Thank you for being here. Second day in a row. We appreciate that. And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain at his command. And I was going to say he's here. He's here a lot. He fills in for us and is so sweet about that. But this is your, quote, regular day.
My regular day.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
happy to be here, as always.
Good to have you here. Let us get right into a lot of topics today, some interesting things to talk about. We'll start off with the top story. Russia warned Monday that Ukraine's government is igniting a civil war in the eastern regions of the country, and it said that Moscow is prepared to step in if those efforts do not stop. Ukrainian officials said Moscow had already stepped in, and that is the problem. Mounting photographic evidence suggests that Russian special forces have been active in eastern Ukraine for at least the past week in support of pro-Russian militants. Meanwhile, Vice President Joe Biden arrived in Kiev for a two-day visit to meet with political leaders, civil society groups, and American diplomats. Biden brought a commitment of U.S. economic assistance. He also warned Russia that future intervention in Ukraine's volatile east will incur new costs. So I guess the easiest question for me
whatever
to start
that
is, right, what are the new costs? What does that mean? Can we guess?
Well, I'm not so sure you won't see deployment of some troops and some ships and other things. But basically, the thought that this could actually escalate into something bad, you know, shooting between the United States and Russia, yeah, is really bad. So much of what we face here is the individual mental health of the people who run these countries. I mean, is there anybody who really thinks that the guy in North Korea wouldn't set off a big one?
You know, if he could, yeah.
If he could. I mean, or is there anybody who really wants to get inside Putin's brain, which I think is a very apparatchik. I mean, I think he measures the odds. He says, they won't come in. I'll take a chance on that, and I'll do what I have to do. And it's paying tremendous dividends for me because it's my popularity is rising in the country. And, I was seen as an authoritarian before. And, Pussy Riot was making all kinds of headlines, doing their thing. And now all of a sudden I'm a national hero. That's got to be heady stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if the economy of Russia were to take a turn and inflation take off and bread be scarce or whatever the metaphor for that is today, I mean, that could really hurt his popularity if this is what is the result of this incursion into Ukraine. Alan, what do you think the vice president is telling the Ukraine leaders, you know, behind the scenes? What's his whole real purpose to be there?
Well, God only knows. But the question is, what do they really believe? I mean, you know, we have had a long history in this country of telling people, like during the Hungarian Revolution, that we would
stay the course.
Yeah, but we would
we'll
be there.
We'd
be there for them.
And we weren't.
Trust us.
What about those guys going into Cuba back in 1960?
Sure,
right.
Sure. So, whatever he tells them, I'm sure they take with a grain of salt. Also, I don't think he can possibly say, we're going to come in and use our troops and our ships to defend you.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like the strategy, of course, is whatever the West can do to bolster the stability in the economy of Ukraine, that'll help Ukraine kind of stave off this, this incursion from Russia. Because if the Russians can keep it chaotic and they can say that the Ukrainians have a civil war going on, then they will have what they regard as a legitimate way in to go protect the Russians in Ukraine and mm-hmm. stop the civil war that we didn't start and had nothing to do with.
But you don't think for a minute that Putin doesn't know exactly what he's doing here and knows that he's looking at this as a chessboard. And he's looking three moves ahead. As Cuomo used to say, the good politician can look six moves ahead. That's Father Cuomo. He's six moves ahead, and he knows. He thinks he's got us boxed. Checkmate.
So all of this leading up to elections at the end of May, of May 25th, White House officials and administration officials are saying that ultimately the vice president is there to help in the run-up to national elections next month. But you have to wonder what that will amount to.
Well, look, the one thing we do know about Putin is that he can take offense at anything. You know, some candidate
portray whatever happens as being offensive.
Yeah, right. So some candidate will say something. They'll say, "Well, if that candidate wins, I'm in with my troops." It can say anything like that. And where does it stop?
When it comes to the next step, I guess. I mean, the president has visited Europe. He is trying to rally European support for Ukraine, and I guess I'm curious on your thoughts on that of the coalition that this country is gathering and the concern from other nations and how that is working for us or against us at this point.
Well, you know, in every group, there is always some people who have the courage to do what's right, and then there are usually a whole bunch of people who are anything but courageous.
They're pragmatists. I believe that's what they are.
Call it pragmatists. Or, you know, I mean, I say something tough on the radio. It happens all the time. Or I write something about something that NPR may be doing at a particular moment, which is completely despicable. I write, and so many people write back to me, the other managers, and they say, "That's terrific, Alan. You go fight them." But they don't write back to the list.
Have fun.
They don't write back to the list where everybody can see them. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing that happens.
What do you think we're seeing on the world stage? I mean, we're not. How many other than Germany have we seen other leaders really come forward and say, "Okay, this is what we need to do"?
Well, I think the Brits have been pretty good, often are.
The availability of gas and fuel for Western Europe, which comes a lot of it comes from Russia through Ukraine. You know that's a good,
right?
You know, that causes a great deal of concern, and that's something Putin has up his sleeve. You know, he can raise those prices or he could cut it right off. And it's not like anybody can immediately fill that gap.
He can say, "You owe us money and we're coming to get it."
Yeah.
We're calling in all of our loans.
Having President, and then we'll move to a break here in just a second, having the Vice President speak with the civil society groups of groups that are working to promote democracy and anti-corruption efforts, I assume that's more symbolic than anything else.
Yeah. I mean, where doesn't that kind of scenario exist in which society, in which, you know, everybody says, "Well, we're all for, you know, apple pie and motherhood and doing this stuff." But nobody, I mean, one of my great frustrations in covering this and discussing this with all of you is that I have no idea who's on first. I mean, I have no idea who these guys are.
I agree. It's confusing about which factions are the ones that are going to be the most radical and be the most divisive or militant. And going into this election, you know, I've seen little analysis of it. It's hard to know who I would vote for in the Ukraine election.
And, you know, I think the only way that Putin's going to stop doing what he's doing, if he'd even pay attention, is if there was a massive uprising a la 1917. I mean, you know, he's acting like a czar. He's doing whatever he wants to do. And he's holding all the cards.
But you don't even have to go back to 1917. I mean, the end of communism came because people were fed up. They just didn't like it. And you know, 1917, of course, was revolution, as we understand
it. Right. But you know, even when the wall fell and people were fed up with communism, now you've got all these oligarchs with money
Sure.
And controlling a lot of the media, controlling a lot of the apparatus within Russia and all of its little nation states that it wants to take over and become one big Russia again. And it's gonna take a massive grassroots, we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore kind of response, and that's not going to happen.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
Might have happened 10 months ago, but it's not happening
it's
now.
It's not going to happen now. And it's a shame. And the only way that is going to, the only thing that's going to change any of this is the economics of the situation. And so if all of Europe and everybody who has a rational thought in their brain boycotts Russia, refuses to do business with Russia, gets its oil from someplace else, but what's the option? You know, okay, so we don't get it from Russia, we get it from the Middle East, you know, or maybe the tar sands up in wherever that is.
I was going to say, or fracking.
Right, mm-hmm.
But that will take, years to build the infrastructure to get it there. So it's not, although there's some political rhetoric about, well, the U.S. should step in and, step up fracking so we can supply natural gas to Western Europe.
Everybody tries to turn it around to their own advantage.
Right, but I mean, that'll take years to do. I mean, that's just not realistic. That's not going to resolve this crisis. Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue with other stories making news. We'd love to hear what you have to say, what's on your mind. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Union Graduate College, offering an MBA in healthcare management now online. The power of an MBA, the passion of healthcare. UnionGraduateCollege.edu. Sweater Venture, East Greenbush, New York. 35 years of hand-knitting fair trade sweaters and accessories in support of indigenous communities around the world. SweaterVenture.com. New York Pain Management, Drs. Charles Gordon and Quentin Fung, offering management of chronic pain and spine care in private office settings in Clifton Park and Glens Falls. 518-371-0777. And Essence MediSpa, Route 299, to Highland, New York. Skin treatments using advanced laser and light-based treatments, skin discoloration, blemishes, acne, and more, treated in a private setting. EssenceMediSpa.com.
As the high-profile congressional fight over military sexual assault recedes, lawmakers are broadening their focus on an array of sex crimes like college campus assaults, preying on child and human trafficking. Unlike the military assault measures, these efforts, almost all bipartisan, have gone largely uncelebrated. But as a group, they represent a far-reaching effort to combat sexual abuse. The legislative attention comes as the White House is preparing to release as early as this week its recommendations on how to stem sexual assaults on college campuses. The actions are in concert with efforts by state legislatures over a variety of law enforcement issues related to sex crimes, like a nationwide backlog of untested rape evidence kits. About half of the states are considering some form of legislation. So it's interesting to see what is being done on college campuses. And we look at this after, of course, the fight over the military and what was or wasn't done there and how successful this will be. What do you think, Libby?
Well, it's about time somebody started talking about these things on a national stage. And with the New York Times being the prominent paper, it's great. What I was blown away when I read this, 20% of women have said they have been raped, 1 in 5 women. And that's just too much. One rape is too much for 20% of the women in this country to say that they have been sexually assaulted is just, it blew my mind. And it's time for us to take a hard look at why women are so easily victimized and what we can do to educate the men. Because, That's what happens. You can't deny that. You know, it's the men who are raping the women. And what we can do to educate men from a very early age that rape, sexual assault, this kind of attitude towards women is just not acceptable. You know, boys at an early age need to be taught. They need to ask, is this okay? You know, they need to ask, are you all right with me touching you? They need to understand that women, girls, need to be respected and their bodies need to be cherished and not abused. I mean, and it's, you know, there's that part of it. There's the human trafficking part, the fact that so many of these kids in human trafficking are coming out of the foster care system. What's wrong? There is something inherently wrong with this picture.
I thought that there was a comment in this article in the New York Times from the junior senator of New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, who said it is simply unacceptable that going to college should increase your chance of being sexually assaulted. And that is a startling figure.
Yeah, it's we had a series of stories a few years ago. Scott Waldman, who used to be our education writer, great reporter, did a comparison of what different colleges, how they handle reports of sexual assault and rape. And it's all over the place, and it's terrible. It's not a good justice system. In one local college, there was an alleged rape, and they forced the victim to confront her attacker in a civil form, you know, in a student court. Yes, a student court, right, with some faculty there. It wasn't handled by the district attorney in the county, and it wasn't, and that was a grotesque example of how there really is all kinds of injustice in handling these cases once they're reported, and you know the discipline is handled on campus, and it really needs to be made uniform. And that's what one of the things they're doing is proposing a survey of like 350 colleges around the country to find out what they're doing and to come up with a uniform way to handle allegations when there have been charges of rape and sexual assault on campuses, to make that more uniform. But I think, Libby, you said it has to begin long before that.
Oh, yeah.
The idea that...
Well, it's culture.
Yeah, it's culture.
It's culture. It's culture in school. It's culture in the family. It's culture, whether it's upper class, lower class, middle class, it's our culture.
And you know, I mean, I hate to put it in these terms, but... when young girls have a Britney Spears or a Miley Cyrus type character with Wrecking Ball, as their role model, you know, it makes it seem like, well, that kind of hypersexualized behavior at an early age is okay, and there's not the sense of right and wrong, and the boys don't get the sense of right and wrong either, because they're seeing, all you got to do is watch MTV and watch the music videos, and you see what the media messages are around the hypersexualization, and you get it at a young age, and so it's okay. But, you know, I remember, I was up at SUNY Albany, we did Don't Walk Alone, we did the blue light system, you know, and there are blue lights all over campus, so if somebody feels threatened, all they have to do is push the blue light, the phone off the hook, and the campus cops will be there. And I remember when we tried to get this stuff in place, the public safety people, they're no longer there, but the public safety guys were so reluctant because they didn't want to recognize that there was a problem on their campus. And I think that's part
because
of the problem.
Because it's a blemish. It makes it difficult to market.
And didn't somebody disappear?
Karen Wilson. But she wasn't on campus. So it was unclear. And Suzanne Lyle, neither one of them were on campus. So it's unclear if that was campus related or some whack job just in the area. But, you know, we used to say, there used to be a bumper sticker, if men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament.
A sacrament. Yeah.
If 20% of the men in this country came forward and said that they had been raped, this would have been solved years ago.
Yeah, and when you take, you know, kids who've been sort of, you know, watch the media that you're talking about and sort of, you know, the Miley Cyrus models and the MTV models, and you get them off on their own in college, and then you introduce the availability of alcohol certain drugs, it just exacerbates the problem. It's just a education, culture, you know?
We're out of time, but and I want to go to a break. But when we come back, I'd like to talk about, because one of the things that I keep on seeing in this is about what the definition of rape is. When you say that it's 20% of what that definition is. Mm-hmm. And I find that startling as well. So we'll go on that and get your letters, and then we'll also go on to some other topics as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Libby Post, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, and your comments will be next. Again, it's Roundtable at WAMC.org after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the actions that are being taken for legislation against sexual assault. We want to read some letters, too. Just a reminder, when you write your letters, we love to hear what you have to say, but considering we have limited time, if you, you know, a line or two is great.
Ike always said that. Couldn't be said in a couple of lines.
And if you want to write longer and you want to put something on the comment line, that is certainly possible, which is 800-695-9170, 800-695-9170. But for us to read your comments on the line, just a line or two would be great, but we do have some letters on this issue.
Okay, so Paige wrote, I agree with most of what Libby said, especially with early education for boys to make rape a men's issue. Where you lose me is blaming Miley on a wrecking ball and a lack of role models for part of this tape epidemic, especially on college campuses. In a pantsuit or a short skirt or completely naked, a woman is never asking to be raped, and that's what I think is missing from this today. I have to disagree with you, Paige. I know that that's what Libby said, and you know, I mean, to try to put words in her mouth and say she was saying that women in
I didn't say Miley or anyone else is ever asking for it or anything like that. All I'm saying is that the images that our young girls get are not pro-independent, respectful, being independent, being able to function as an independent person in society without the approval of men.
And also there is a sexualization at a very, very young age. And I think that's the most, to me, that's one of the most disturbing aspects of it is that because that audience of that person is a young audience.
Right.
And JR said, good morning to you all for the support for your apt remarks about cultural hypersexuality of women. Shopping for my preschool granddaughters, I found the girls' clothing department full of clothes I wouldn't have worn as a young adult. And I came up in the 60s and 70s, a typical example, pink jeans with the word juicy spelled down sequins on the seat of the pants. When JCPenney buys into the sensibility, we surely have to do some self-reflection. And then I got messed up here, joke. Save me from the Cossacks at the door.
Do you see Jessica's letter?
No, you read that.
Okay, when discussing the societal factors that lead to the way the young people handle sexuality and rape, casting blame on women by shaming the way they express their sexuality or the clothing they wear only serves to reinforce to boys and men that rape is the woman's fault and that if women truly didn't want sexual advance, they would not dress or behave in certain ways. This is damaging to women and doesn't bring us any closer to fighting this horror. Rape is not the fault of Britney Spears or Miley Cyrus. Rape is the fault of boys who fail to recognize women as equal human beings.
Indeed. Indeed. And we got several letters, as often we do, about Ukraine. Let's see here. We heard from Pete from Tolan. A lively discussion ensues. Here's one thing you might want to be a bit careful of. Ascribing the motives and actions of the U.S. State Department and their NATO proxies to Putin and Russia in general is distasteful to those of us who bother to thoroughly inform ourselves and positively Orwellian. Research before rhetoric, please. And Rocco Rizzo, our great friend, says, what if there was, why is there only one day for Earth Day? Shouldn't Earth Day be every capitalized day? We should care more about our home planet, and there is no planet plan B. Thanks, Rocco and Rosendale. And I have to say, Rocco is a huge fan of Pete Seeger and the Weavers. And at the end of the Weavers record, the Weavers on tour, there is, why can't we have Christmas the whole year around? And so Rocco says, why can't we have Earth Day the whole year around?
We love your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. I do want to move on to other topics, but I do think that we get into this. It is interesting of because many of the letters that we've gotten of who's at fault, and I think it's important that both men and women, right, Libby? That there's an education of both men and women on this as a cultural, because nothing is going to change unless all parties involved here are educated.
Absolutely. You know, the women, young girls and young women need to be educated to not be so sexualized and see themselves as that's all that they're worth. And young men need to understand that
they need to respect women.
Right. That's the bottom line, that they need to respect women, and that it's not just their right. And, you know, what's amazing to me is that we're still talking about this. I mean, we were talking about this 30 years ago on campus, and we're still talking about this. And it just doesn't seem to change all that much. You have little pockets of change, but you need some wholesale change.
And not to muddy the waters further, and not to throw a hand grenade into the conversation, but just to throw it out there before we move on. We talk about this about respect of women, the respect of men, but we have to work on respecting each other. We have an entire issue of bullying. We have an issue of...
And it's all connected.
It is all connected. We look... I don't in any way, shape, or form want to belittle the issue of sexual assault. I do not mean that in any way, shape, or form. However, we have an overall problem about respect to other human beings, regardless of...
Of whomever.
Of gender, right. Race, sex, right. What identification, whatever. And it seems like, yes, it is all connected.
And Ted reminds us, quote, parents are the ones buying the clothing. Not always. I mean, kids buy their own clothing a lot.
That's right.
Living in it. Yeah, but parents are the ones that get to bring it
I think
back.
All of this really underscores the challenge to parents today. I mean, it is a tough job, you know, raising
absolutely
kids in our
right.
society where they're bombarded with so many messages to try to, you know, make sure they're getting the right messages and drive that home.
Let's move on to some other issues and Mike's interesting stories from the pages of the TU.
Well, it's a big day for developments in the Capital Region's casino front. You know, the news broke yesterday.
This is terrific.
Yeah, the owners of the Saratoga Casino and Raceway have abandoned their plans for a full-blown casino in Saratoga Springs that was going to be built at the site of the 10-year-old Racino there. And they have a new site in Rensselaer County off I-90 in East Greenbush. It's going to kind of change the landscape of the whole battle that's going to go on for who's going to get the license from the state. There'll probably be one license for the greater Capital Region. Jim Featherston Haw and Daniel Garrity are the partners who were going
Feathers.
To build it in Saratoga Springs. Right?
Feathers has been around forever.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And now they've purchased 72 acres off Route 4 in East Greenbush over near the FedEx Distribution Center. It has a great view of the Empire
of
State
Albany,
Plaza and the skyline of Albany.
It's a great place to watch the fireworks.
And they're planning a $300 million resort casino. They've also acquired an option for 80 adjacent acres and then 300 more acres down the way in the town of Skodak, where they intend to build an 18-hole championship golf course and spa at the site of the Evergreen Country Club. And they said, this is it. They're done with Saratoga Springs. People in Saratoga Springs are saying, good, because most of the city council and many residents in the city said that they were against it. And besides, as Joanne Yepsen, the mayor of Saratoga Springs, said, the plan was that this would bail out a financially downtrodden city or community, and Saratoga Springs just doesn't fit that.
No. And that's almost always the case, Mike, which is that the well-heeled places, say no.
Yeah. And they get
we like it the way it
well,
is.
Well, it was heard loud and clear here. Just a couple more points. Rochester area developer David Flom has already announced his plans, and we've covered that a lot, of the proposed casino off of Exit 23 in the city of Albany, just south of the exit, thruway exit, not near downtown. And
who do you think is giving money to the political candidates these days? Wouldn't that be interesting to sort of know? Because they keep, as I understand the story, and Mike, you're much stronger on this than I am, but that they keep extending the period when you can you can take back your money and the rest of it, right up to the election.
Well, no. Right now, technically, right now, they have till tomorrow to put up the $1 million down payment, I suppose.
But they can take it back, right?
They have until June 30th to take it back. But by putting, I mean, tomorrow, I mean, the end of this week, we'll know who's in, at least at this point.
Well, we know who's put money into Cuomo's $33 million or...
Well,
or
David Flom is a Republican, one of the members of the committee, Republicans for Cuomo. He's a big backer of, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush and some other prominent Republicans around the country, which is kind of ironic because...
And Andy Cuomo.
He's building a... He wants to build a casino in the city of Albany, promising a city that's heavily Democratic, jobs and... you know, on the land where our U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand grew up, you know, and he's a big Republican. But that's just a little irony, as there always is.
There was another story in the paper this morning about how he's made promises to all these other communities in the Catskills.
Right. Chris Churchill, our columnist, wrote today, expanded on what James Odato has written already in our Sunday piece, a profile of Mr. Flom, that in the Catskills, in the town of Mamercating, he pretty much promised them that if they supported him on a casino, he would build a casino there. It would be his only casino. He's also looked and made efforts to build one in Orange County. He says he's talking about regions. That's the only one he wants to build in that region. This is the only one he wants to build in this region. But it does raise some questions, you know, that there a lot of times when developers, whether it be Mr. Flom or whether it's Feathers and Mr. Garrity, you know, they're going to propose big ideas and some of the details are yet to come. And that's what will happen in the next several weeks. They're going to have to come up with a detailed application to submit by the end of June or pull out. And then they'll be vetted by the State Wagering and Racing Committee that will award the, you know, the licenses.
So do you think anybody might be helping to pull the strings behind the scenes, like the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is interesting because the city of Albany, which has political might, is backing David Flom.
M-I-T-E, Mike, or M-I-T-H-T?
Yes, both. M-I-G-H-T is what I meant, but, you know. And they have sway, and their elected officials in the state legislature seem supportive of the plan for Albany. And yet Jim Featherston Hawes has been around Albany a long time. Alan, what would you say his chances of finding some political support would be?
Well, you know, for a long time, I can't really give you the total biography about Feathers.
But we don't have enough time.
But I can tell you he's been all over the place, and a lot of people, including the Cuomos and others, you know, were big friends for a long time. Then I think there was some kind of thing. I don't know what happened. You know, you just don't know. You just don't know.
But he does certainly know the channels and know who he has
to convince. Yeah. There's nobody better.
And there's still a couple of other possibilities. One proposed for Schenectady. There's still possibly one in the city of Rensselaer. We'll know after this week if those players are still in, and it'll be a very interesting few months.
Let's take a quick break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable, WAMC.org. More after this short break.
Support for WAMC goes from Dia Beacon, contemporary art in the Hudson Valley, on view beginning May 5th. Carl Andre, sculpture as place from 1958 to 2010, open Thursday through Monday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., diaart.org. Indian Mountain School, Lakeville, Connecticut, an independent co-educational junior boarding and day school for students from pre-kindergarten through grade 9, indianmountain.org. Dr. Melanie Shi, OMD Kingston, sixth-generation practitioner of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, insurance accepted, the Chinese Healing Arts Center, 845-338-6045. And Current Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance, November 12th through 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, currentcompliance.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel as we wrap up for this Tuesday edition. Kudos, Mike, to Robert Gavin. I just want to read this first line because it's a great first line of a story. As a child, Glenn Unger danced on Broadway and drew the attention of Fred Astaire. As an adult, he danced around federal tax laws and drew the attention of the FBI. On Monday, Unger took center stage on Broadway again, only this time in a federal courthouse in Albany.
Yeah, Rob Gavin.
That doesn't get much better than that.
A great reporter. There was mention in his, I guess this fella, Glenn Unger, who is a former orthodontist from Columbia County, who was sentenced in federal district court yesterday for
images
tax evasion.
Images of the marathon man right? dance in my brain.
Anyway, he talked about his past where he was in The Music Man on Broadway, and he played the role of Winthrop. And he received maximum time under the federal guidelines also yesterday.
He'll be dancing there, too.
Mr. Unger was accused of trying to scam the Internal Revenue Service and the federal government out of $36 million by filing 14 false tax returns over a period of about 4 years. He was sentenced to 97 months in prison, followed by a supervised release that will continue for 3 years after that. But he's just an interesting guy. He read from the Bible, and he talked for a long time, and then finally the judge said, I've heard enough, he did tell the judge that he was going to forgive him also, which was nice.
What a guy.
He used aliases. He ran a lot of scams. Even when he was an orthodontist, he was accused of passing his customers off to another orthodontist when he left his practice, but had previously taken the fees from these 300 people that he passed over. So, I mean, he's got lots of things in his past, but he's going to be going to federal prison. But just a fascinating story of some of the characters that show up in court, federal district court, and Rob covers them well.
And it's funny how these always come up just around, as I've said before, just around income tax time as a reminder to everybody else to do it.
Okay, let's do the lightning round. We have three stories in 7 minutes, so we'll do what we can here. The Boy Scouts of America, which voted late last year to allow gay scouts but not openly gay scout leaders, has revoked the charter of a church-sponsored troop here in Seattle for refusing to fire its adult gay scoutmaster.
Terrible.
And this was what was wrong with that decision by Boy Scouts of America, this half-and-half decision where we'll let people decide and we can't have scoutmasters that are gay, but we'll allow gay scouts. I mean, that's just ridiculous. This guy is married to his partner. He's active in the church. He's doing community service. And there's some sense that if an adult male is a homosexual, that he's going to be a predator or something.
Well, not a sense. That's what we were taught for years and years and years.
Well, it's
you know,
just
and
wrong.
It is wrong, and we all know that the majority of pedophiles are straight men. But you know, be that as it may, the Boy Scouts are going the way of the dodo bird on this. You know, when the majority of the country favors marriage equality now. It's time for the Boy Scouts, and this is, you know, their last vestige, their last holding on to what they thought was whatever it is, the, you know, truth, justice, and the American way, and they're really going to hurt because of this, because there are going to be new organizations, and I think there already is a new organization that's allowing gay scouts or gay whatever they're calling themselves in terms of whatever the gay
right.
whatever they are. Weebles or whatever, but you know, it's time. It's just time already, you know, because what the Boy Scouts is doing is perpetrating that notion that
that
gay men
century,
are,
you know?
are predators, and that we recruit and all that sort of stuff. You know, I always joke around. I'd like to be able to renege some people's gay cards. So we don't recruit. This is just the way who we are, and it's time for the Boy Scouts to get a grip.
Were you guys both Boy Scouts?
Yeah,
I was a Boy Scout.
I was a Boy Scout.
I was a great experience.
Remember gay guys in your troop?
You know, I was. It was at an age where I had no idea, but I'm sure there were.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely sure.
Yeah.
There were.
Yeah. See, I don't know, but we also had a lot of. You know, there were so many women and girls involved in our sort of scouting together. You know.
Really?
Yeah.
Not in our place.
Yeah. Though this is when in
that
Philadelphia, and so
yeah.
it was very integrated. You know. So
well,
I never really
great.
Thought of it that way. But
yeah, it's a healthy way to.
Right.
You know,
and I can tell you this: the Girl Scouts never had this problem.
No.
No, that's right.
The Girl
Scouts
are like, come on.
Really?
Yeah, right.
Well, see, the Boy Scouts was sort of paramilitary. There is no question. And ours was, our troop, Troop 579.
It can be.
Hand
I mean,
boys.
Once in a while, you'll get like a...
579.
Troop 579. And we won every jamboree and every camporee, and we trained like soldiers. It was unbelievable.
So
that's
and
right.
It made you who you are today.
Without question.
Okay, do we want to talk about Aereo, or do we want to talk about the kid who was the stone? Away, which is a story I just cannot understand.
I can't believe he's alive.
Yeah, they say that he must have experienced hypothermia, yeah. where the temperatures can get down to 80 below.
Yeah, yeah. Who knew that?
I mean, it couldn't have been that.
This is a kid who is I mean, I still don't quite understand this, but 16 years old, he'd run away from home. He climbed a fence at the San Jose airport. He crawled into the left rear well of a Hawaiian Airlines flight. He went to Hawaii, and he survived.
Yeah, and he survived fairly well. I mean, they say that the hypothermia actually lowered his body temperature and probably protected him. He went
like
into
a bear.
Like an yes, you're right. He went into a state of unconsciousness for most of the trip, and then when it landed and gradually the pressure came back, he came back.
You know what I love about it? I love the fact that they're not going to prosecute.
No, yeah, they're not going to press charges.
I love that because you know we'll make an example out of him. You know, you see that too often. He's almost got a little bit of heroic status here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what? They haven't released his name, and they're going to just treat it as like a family court issue. Yeah.
But it is being called a miracle that you can go into a wheel well of a Boeing 767 and go from California to Hawaii.
And he's not
and
the first
survive.
Guy to do it either, I don't think.
You know, there have been some tragedies.
The
New York Times story today cites one in London where someone... fell from the plane. Either they went unconscious or died, and then fell from the plane.
And not to overanalyze this, but you know, do you notice a kid climbing into the wheel well of a plane at some point?
Well,
climbing over
see,
the fence,
they
running
did
across
apparently
the tarmac.
See him going over the fence.
Well, there is that security issue. That
yeah, it's like that seems to be.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
this was a 16-year-old kid who was trying to run away. But if this kid had a different, if
right,
somebody
yeah,
else had a different motive,
right.
what is the possibility?
There was a story
that,
about a guy in a kayak in down in Queens. You know, down off the down near Kennedy Airport. And he was stranded or his boat beached or something, and he climbed up, and he had a yellow jacket on. He climbed over the fence and walked into the terminal, and they arrested him for breaching security. But, you know, the fact that he got that far and identified himself, hey, I had trouble out in the whatever.
We are out of time, but you can weigh in and keep the conversation going. Roundtable@wamc.org. My sincere thanks to Alan, Libby, and Mike. You guys are great. Thank you very much. We'll reconvene tomorrow. Thank you all so much. And the roundtable continues after the short break.